time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. This is the RTE Soccer Podcast. I'm Adrian Eames and James O'Toole is on the line, together but apart, as has been the way since, what, James, mid-March now at this stage?
I think it's the second weekend of March, wasn't it? I know the last live football I watched was Waterford versus Derry City, so it must have been around that time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers was on the telly the weekend before it all ground to a halt. Listen, James, riddle me this. Every week when I start the podcast, I say, this is the RTE Soccer Podcast. And yet, at the back of my mind, I know there's a guy in Dungarvan or Mount Charles or halfway up Carrantool, and he's saying, should be the RTE Football Podcast, not Soccer Podcast. Is he right or is he wrong?
I'm a bit on the fence of it. When we were growing up, it was always football and GAA. So we grew up with football. And as I said earlier on, I think the word soccer came into our psyche somewhere around the World Cup in the USA, because that's when we learned about the MLS mostly, which is obviously Major League Soccer. So I think that's when it really started sneaking in, and it was either you were either a GAA football man or a soccer man after that, I think.
The reason I'm bringing it up is because you mentioned there the MLS. The MLS, in their official Twitter feed last week, sent out a tweet saying it's called soccer. If anyone disagrees, reply to this. Now, you're after saying it came about around about 94 in the World Cup in the United States, but I have to say I was growing up before all of that, and certainly in the West we called it soccer. Now, I know it's association football, I get that, but we called it, you either played soccer or Gaelic. And by Gaelic, you generally in the West, you know, where I'm from, you meant Gaelic football as opposed to hurling, because hurling wasn't really a sport that was played in or around the Sligo region. And some would say that's still the way it is now. But we called it soccer.
It's strange. It depends on how much of a, I think it really depends on how much of a foothold the GAA had in your local community. Obviously in Sligo, it was big because it was a rural community as well. So, Sligo, Mayo, stuff like that, I'm sure it would be GAA was football, that was it. But around the pale, as it were, it was definitely football, not soccer.
Definitely football. Well, a man with a bucket full of medals, he can answer the question for us, is on the line. Pat Fenlon, football or soccer? I suspect you're going to say football.
Yeah, I think probably anybody in Dublin would have always said you'd have played football or you played Gaa. That's the way we would have looked at it. So, always football for us, yeah.
All right, okay. We'll ask the rest of our guests as we go along. I've no doubt that Guy Swindles will call it football. It'll be interesting when we go to James Chambers, who's in the United States. Will it be soccer or will it be football? I suspect it may well be soccer. And we'll also get the thoughts on this pressing matter from Áine Gorman, the Irish international, very shortly. But Pat, how are you doing? How are you coping with the lockdown and all that goes with it? Of course, Linfield, top of the table when football was ground to a halt. And as things stand, a bit like in the League of Ireland, in terms of the Irish Premiership, it's all a bit up in the air. And they're talking about not making a decision on a resumption or possibly just calling it quits until the 30th of June. Is that right?
Well, that's a talk. I know there's a meeting tonight as well around it. So your original question, I'm like everybody else, I suppose, I'm just getting on with it, and plenty of meetings on phones and laptops and that sort of stuff. But yeah, this is a difficult situation for everybody, and you know, any leagues around the world, it's a difficult situation, you know, how you sort it out. But I think leaving it to June the 30th is like I said, just fobbing it off and putting it back. I think we're a little bit different in relation to League of Ireland. I mean, for me, the crux of this is European football. And if you look at the League of Ireland scenario, if they're talking about this 14 tournament, it's obviously geared towards having teams ready for Europe. In their case, you know, League of Ireland teams are already qualified for Europe this year, but in their case, we're still in the process of qualifying. So I think it's a little bit different, both leagues. We have 7 games left, you know, 2 before the league splits and then 5 after the split. So, and it is a difficult case for everybody. But I just think that there needs to be a bit more clarity around it from everybody, and I think from UEFA as well as anything. And at the end of the day, Adrian, with this, I think government will decide when football starts everywhere. You know, that's going to be the case for everybody, you know. So, as I said at the start, it's difficult. But I think kicking it down the road to the 30th of June is just prolonging the agony for everybody.
I should point out, of course, that you're general manager of Linfield, and Linfield were going very nicely, 4 points clear of Coleraine when a football ground to a halt. But what do you think is likely to happen, Pat, or is it too difficult at this stage to make a call on that?
Listen, I think it's too difficult. I think, you know, in general, we all want to finish the league and play. That's what we want to do. We want to play football. We want to get on the players, want to, the manager wants to get back on the pitch and win the league on the pitch. But, you know, you're running out of time and, you know, it's difficult. You've got European places now as well, which is big for all the clubs. So I think I don't see a scenario where Irish League clubs can play behind closed doors. You know, all that goes with that in relation to testing and everything else is, it's just the cost would be too big for them clubs. So I think a decision is going to have to be made. You know, you call the league as it is and declare the league positions as they are. People will probably say it's easy for you to say you sit on top of the league, but, you know, I don't see many alternatives. You know, that's the big problem. What are the alternatives for us? We leave it till the 30th of June. It's a long way off, and then, you know, you've got European football, or hopefully European football coming down the road. So it is very, very difficult to sort it out. I'm glad I'm not in that position. For all the associations, it is difficult. But I think there needs to be a bit more guidance and a bit more clarity from UEFA around the whole thing, because it's all geared towards European football.
And does the view on the situation, does it vary from club to club? Presumably Coleraine, who lies second to Linfield in the league, they'd be very keen for a resumption, wouldn't they?
Absolutely, and you can understand why. I think when you look around leagues and when you look in dressing rooms and players and coaching managers, I'm sure every one of them want to get back to play. That's the main thing. They all want to get back to play and finish out the season. You know, if you look at administrators who are looking at, like you say, winning a league, getting to Europe, being relegated, it's a different story. So, but it will differ around the clubs. There's been a lot of talk up there around different options on the league. I'm not sure there's loads of options in relation to how you finish your league. I think there's one or two and they've got to be explored. And I think the sooner you do that, the easier it is for everybody to move forward and look forward maybe to planning the next season, whenever that may take place.
And Pat, speaking about June 30th, is that a case that they're waiting on this UEFA meeting to happen to see if European places count or not, even at this stage? Or is it, as you said, just kicking down the road?
Yeah. And I think they've put the dates back again. The dates, you know, there was supposed to be, I think, the 25th or 26th of May. That's been now put back, you know, and then you've got a day to nominate your clubs for Europe. So, like I said, I think there needs to be a bit more clarity from Europe for all the leagues. The smaller leagues particularly, where it's difficult for them, I think you'll see your return, and we've seen already with the start of Bundesliga and the Spanish league's been given the go-ahead, Premier League. I think you'll see all the big leagues, because they can't afford to do it. I think you'll see all them progress and finish the league. The smaller leagues is obviously more difficult for them.
And of course, like, there's a lot of finances have been put into the Irish League this year, like the Glentoran and stuff like that, have had extra finances put in. So something there has to be an outcome for the likes of them guys, them investors, to see something that's going to happen and get football back on the pitch, like, as soon as possible for them even.
Yeah, of course. You know, again, finance is massive, and that's what I'm saying. If you were to play the remaining games in the Irish League behind closed doors, it's then, you know, where's the support coming from the clubs for that? I mean, we've seen the IFA come out and say that the hat-trick funding they receive will not be used for that, which is disappointing. You know, if it is the flagship league of Northern Irish football, then it should be given all the support it needs if they want to finish it. And like I say, everybody wants to finish it on the pitch. You know, if there's funding there to finish it, well, then let's go and finish it. If it's not, then you've got to make a decision on that. That's what I'm saying. I don't think there's loads of decisions here. I think it's straightforward to one or two. If you're going to finish the season, you know, support the clubs and finish the season. If you're not, we'll then call it and make a decision.
And Pat, if there is a resumption, if that's the decision, playing behind closed doors, it brings with it, of course, a whole raft of issues in terms of structures and protocols that have to be put in place. Do you think the clubs in the Irish League, or the Irish Premiership as it's called these days, will be ready and geared up and able to deal with all of that?
I don't think so at the moment. I think it's a similar situation with the League of Ireland. You know, we've all been around the facilities. A lot of the facilities, you know, are decent, but are they equipped to handle this sort of thing, which nobody's used to? I would think that would be very difficult for a lot of the clubs. You know, so it's not something they would have looked at previously, but going forward, it is something we will have to look at. But I think it will be difficult for a lot of clubs to do. And again, they've discussed maybe playing the games in two stadiums. That's Windsor Park and maybe Ballymena Showgrounds, which is one of the better stadiums that probably could cope with this, you know. And even playing them in them two stadiums with smaller crowds, you know, that's all being discussed and it's all up in the air. But like I say, you know, you revert back to everything. It really reverts back to what government says. You know, obviously the Northern Ireland government will have to make a call in relation to when their back to work protocol kicks in, the same for our government here. So, you know, we've got to be guided by that, I know, but it has to, you know, I give credit to the people in the League of Ireland because they've come up with an idea. You know, people are not getting criticised and there is faults for it, but they're trying to organise something where, you know, in our league in the North at the moment, we're just sitting on our hands and not doing a lot.
This is the four-team tournament. You think that's a positive development, putting that out there for the teams that are bound for Europe?
Yeah, listen, it's a difficult one, but at least it's something. They're discussing something around it. Is it possible to do? I don't know. The players, I think, started all testing today. I presume if that goes well then it'll gather momentum and go forward. If it doesn't go well, which hopefully it does go well, but if it doesn't, then you know you're back to a situation where it may be a problem. So, but at least there's a little bit of a plan in place. They're trying to get things kick-started, you know, and I'd just like to see the legislators in the Irish League take that on board and try, you know, come up with some alternatives. But like I said, the decisions will be made by government at the end of the day.
And speaking of testing there, Pat, one of the first players to test positive for the virus, for coronavirus, was a Linfield player. That was way back in early March. I should ask, how is he? How is he doing?
Yeah, he's fine. Like, I spoke to him, you know, a day or two off. And again, like a lot of people, he wasn't showing any symptoms, so it was difficult. You know, he'd attended a game in the UK and with a friend of his and came back as friends, had felt unwell and went to hospital and obviously did a test and came back positive. So he just decided he better go and get tested. And again, you know, he like I said, no real symptoms at all. He's fine. There's no issue with him at all. He's a young, healthy man. So thankfully there was no problem.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I guess, though, the fact that it happened, and it happened to a player from a high-profile club like Linfield in the Irish Premiership, it's probably focused minds on the risks, the potential risks involved in returning to play football.
Yeah, and that's what I said. I think at the end of the day, you know, you're talking about people's lives here. So, you know, we all want to play football. We all love the game. We all want to be back in. We're all missing it. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, the people that legislate in the country have got to make sure that it's safe for everybody to go back and play. You know, whatever the sport is, you know, and originally the contact sport was a no-no. So, you know, it is difficult for them all. And we've got to be guided by the people that run the country, you know, and the same in the North of Ireland. They've got to be guided by the Assembly. So, you know, it's up to them people to say these things are safe for us to do and how you do them. Then it's like, you know, everybody going back to jobs, going back to work, you know, making sure you carry out the protocols right, and everything is done in place to limit, you know, any spread of the virus. So that's why I said I think a lot of this will revert back to what government says rather than football people making decisions. I think it's good that people have plans and are looking forward, but I think at the end of the day, we've got to be guided by the people that run the country.
And for you, I guess there's lots of other issues involved as well, because you've an administrative role now, of course, these days with the club, in terms of dealing with player contracts and possibly issues around insurance. Is that the case? Are those the kind of issues that you have to address in the coming weeks?
Yeah, and you've got issues with, you know, on both sides of the border. You know, with the Irish League, you've got an issue where we have a lot of players coming out of contract on the 21st of May, you know, through the whole league. You know, what happens with them? You know, their contract's finished. They can't sign for anyone else, you know. The clubs that were with, obviously, you know, there is a debate at the moment, can they be extended, you know, but obviously some managers want to keep players, some managers won't want to keep players, so you've got all that up in the air, you know, and I think that's why kicking it down the road to the 30th of June is difficult, you know, because all them issues have to be resolved fairly quickly, you know, and again, you don't want a situation where, you know, certain players leave clubs and, you know, the league does come back and the squads are different to when it finished. You know, so it is a bit of a nightmare from that point of view. And then again, in down south, you've got a situation where some League of Ireland clubs are continuing to pay their players. Some are not. Some have publicly said we can't afford it. We're releasing our players. You know, if the league comes back, are these players eligible to play for our clubs? Is there penalties for not paying them? You know, it's a minefield. It is a minefield for legislators, and it's a difficult one, you know. And, you know, the League of Ireland is a case that if they get the Premier Division back for the season and finish it out, they're talking maybe cutting it down to 18 games. You know, does the fourth division come back? Is there no relegation? There's loads of questions, because if you're a team that's paying your players every week, you know, and you come back and you finish below a team, or you get relegated and the team above you has not been paying, that's a bit of a minefield for everybody as well. So lots of questions, Adrian. I'm afraid I don't have the answers for them all, but I think there's lots of discussion around it, and you know, that's the only way we can do it. I keep reverting back to the people in power making the decisions, but there is lots of questions, particularly around players' contracts in both leagues.
Can I just ask you as well, Pat, the All-Ireland League, Derry City came out the week before last saying it's the way forward. The latest proposal by Kieran Lucid, because he obviously had to amend what was initially on the table, but Derry's saying it could be a seminal moment for football in Ireland. What's your view, or the Linfield view, on the All-Ireland League as it stands now? Because the latest proposals put forward, they're quite complex, but basically, you know, the Irish Premiership would still retain its European places, as indeed with the League of Ireland. But where do you think we're at in terms of this All-Ireland League that's been mooted for some time?
Well, I think, you know, when it came out, I've spoken to Kieran plenty of times, and I know the work that's gone into this. When it came out initially, I was very disappointed with the FA's straightaway decision to say that they weren't interested. I know they've spoken to Kieran plenty of times since then. You know, the one thing with this is it allows us to talk. We've got plenty of time on our hands to talk and try to resolve the issues around the game, you know, and that's probably the one thing, hopefully, that will come out, that we have made steps and progress in that. My personal thoughts on it, I think it'd be brilliant. That's my personal thoughts on it. That's not the club or Wolf Force, you know, opinion on it. We've had discussion around the boardroom on it. We've had discussion, I've obviously spoke to the manager and stuff around that, but I think it is time to try change and make it better. And I listen to the arguments, particularly from the IFA in relation that they have a strong league at the moment and, you know, teams are okay and they're going well. But, you know, I don't see that. You know, we've got a competitive league, absolutely got a competitive league, because up till probably 3 weeks before the season did end, we had probably four or five teams that were in a shout winning the league. So from that point of view, we have a competitive league. But we also have still a semi-professional league. You know, how do you want to make the league better? How can you bring it on? You know, and I think that's the one issue. You know, there's no money coming into the Irish league. The prize money for winning the league is really, really poor. You know, there's no TV money coming into the league. So to say that, you know, something else that might be different than an All-Ireland league, there's no substance to it. We don't have anything at the moment anyway. We're not raking in loads of money in the league we have at the moment. So I'm disappointed that they have come out again and said that, you know, it's not going to happen. We haven't changed our opinion on it, because I think it's something that could actually ignite both leagues. And like you say, it doesn't affect them. One of the big concerns for all the top teams was that it would have an effect on European positions, and more so on the north, because to be fair, the southern teams are probably stronger at the moment, you know. And to say, if that's the case, that there's no implications to your European spots, well, then I think, you know, it should be explored even further. But It's up to the powers that be that run, you know, both leagues, that they want to explore this. And unfortunately, one of them has said that they're not overly keen on it at the moment, really.
And Pat, obviously this lull in football, no football happening, was this put a bit of pressure on the IFA now to rethink their stance on this? Do you reckon some pressure might come on board, especially as nothing's coming out of them as far as getting back to play is concerned?
I don't think so. I think they came out in the last week or two to say that their position hasn't changed on this, and they're, you know, they're geared towards developing the Irish League as it is. And, you know, like I said, if that's the case, that is disappointing. My own club's opinion on it, I think, would be fairly split. You know, I think there'd be a big split in relation to, you know, from the members and the supporters. I think it would be split at the moment. I think they'd like the idea of playing against the teams from down south. Would they lose their identity a little bit? Would it be more difficult for us? Absolutely. But I think a club like ours, you know, being in a better league and a more prosperous league will attract, you know, better players to the league as well. And we're a big club, you know, and we are a big club. We should be able to take anybody on in the island, to be fair, and I think we can. As they reminded me over the last couple of days of an anniversary of the Setanta Cup not that long ago. But it is disappointing that I think it's been, the amount of work that Kieran Lucid has put into this is frightening. And there's a lot of good football people, you know, back that and are behind it and are involved in it. So but I think in relation to the IFA, I don't think it's going to go anywhere at the moment.
All right, Pat, stay with us. We're joined on the line by Áine O'Gorman of Piemont United and the Republic of Ireland. Áine, is it football or soccer for you?
Football and ga.
Yeah. It seems to be a pale thing, as James said earlier. It's perhaps Dublin and its environs. Whereas, is that it? East Coast vibe. How are you keeping, Áine, in the lockdown? Have you been keeping your fitness levels up and all that?
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm just obviously doing what I can in it.
And of course, you have to wait as well until the Champions League draw before, you know, before there's opposition known, before there are dates known. And in waiting for that, you cannot really resume any kind of collective gatherings. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're obviously waiting on UEFA to confirm whether our Champions League qualifiers will go ahead in August or not. So if they go ahead, hopefully we'll be able to get back training soon enough. But if not, it looks like we're going to have to wait till the 20th of July to get back to team training.
Yeah, it's been a long wait because you were on the verge of starting the season back in March as well when this all happened.
Yeah, it was just actually, we came back from Montenegro and we landed in the airport that Thursday, and then training was cancelled that Thursday, schools were closed, and then the league obviously was meant to start that Sunday and it was postponed. So yeah, we still haven't got kicked off, so I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. That leads no logistical problems, that we can just kick off going when obviously we get go ahead from government, etc.
And have you been keeping in touch with each other, possibly doing Zoom sessions, or do you have your own individual training programs?
Yeah, like, so we're obviously, I think everyone's keeping themselves ticking over. But every Tuesday at evening, we do a team Zoom session. So I usually take that as well. So that's good as well, just to keep the interaction and just a little bit of conditioning work, and just so everyone can see each other and continue a little bit of a routine while we wait and see what happens.
And does everybody show up on Zoom on time?
Names. Most people are there. Yeah. Most of them, they're all waiting in the waiting room usually, yeah. Few minutes to six, just a few minutes before 6:30 I heard you start that. Yeah, so it's all good.
Yeah, and what's your own gut feeling? You know, perhaps with you and the teammates, do you think you'll be playing Champions League football, or do you just have to wait and see?
I think if we all thought about it now, we'd say we won't be. But look, who knows what's going to happen over the next few weeks? I think, yeah, it'd be nice for a decision like Pat said to come down from UEFA pretty soon about it. But I think they're probably waiting to see how the Bundesliga, the Premier League kicks off, and they've obviously prioritised them domestic league finishing out. So I think I'm kind of 50-50 at the moment whether we'll go ahead or not. Obviously, we play in like a 4-team tournament over a week to 10 days, so they'll obviously be travelling involved in that, and I don't know what the criteria and things will be around that as well, so, and protocols, etc. So I suppose we'll just have to sit tight and wait and see.
And what about the domestic league? Do you think it'll happen?
I don't know. I don't really know. I suppose the Women's National League are probably meeting on a continuous basis, and like, I don't really have the answers to anything. I don't know if anyone does at the moment. Obviously, we're listening to the government health advice, getting back. And look, I think from my impression of reading what came the FAI's pathway back to playing the other week, was that we wouldn't, if we're playing in Europe, we'll be back when we know them dates, and we'll have like the men are a kind of a pilot tournament or a pilot league. I don't know much of the criteria around that either. Obviously, to prepare us to go into to represent the league in Europe. If not, it looks like it will be back to training 20th of July, and I don't know what the alternative is, whether we play a short league, whether we switch to winter league. I honestly don't know.
It's difficult, as you said, Anya, because unlike the men's Champions League, instead of having a head-to-head knockout, you've obviously got groups before you get to a knockout. So you're going to have to decide on a safe hub for these games to take place in. So that adds an extra element into you guys getting back to even Champions League football.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I don't even know where UEFA's thought process are in regards. That obviously depends what other clubs you draw against, what country they're from, what country it's going to be hosted in. Obviously, we're not the only four teams that have to be facilitated in this regard. So, it's a bit of a minefield, and that's why I'm quite doubtful it might go ahead, whether they push it out. But there's already such a backlog of games. For instance, like our Euro qualifiers against Ukraine have been cancelled. Germany have been cancelled. So all that stuff as well, on the back of it, has to be rescheduled into some sort of international window as well, especially if the leagues do resume.
And just on that, Anya, has Vera Poe and the international management team, have they been keeping in touch with the players?
Yeah, Vera's been great. We obviously have a bit of a WhatsApp group as well, that a few messages bounce around in, and I know Vera was onto some of us individually as well, just about her training plans, and if she'll send us on programmes, and if we need any help her assistant. She's at the other end of the phone, and I suppose like everyone as well, she's just waiting to see what's going to happen with our upcoming games as well.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you luck and best wishes, of course, and keep up the Zoom sessions and keep cracking the whip every Tuesday night.
Yeah, they hate me for the Albertis.
Find yourself. Talk soon. That's Audio Gorman of Piemont United and the Republic of Ireland. Now, of course, officials in England keeping a very close eye on developments right across Europe as football resumes, of course. Very much Germany, the Bundesliga has been the focus of attention the last couple of weeks. But what's the latest on the return of the Premier League in England? Project Restart, as it's called. We spoke to Guy Swindles about the chances of football returning a few weeks ago. Time has moved on and he's back with us on the line. Guy, it's beginning to look ever more likely that we will see a resumption of the Premier League with Liverpool oh so close to finally landing the title. Perhaps in the next couple of weeks, mid-June they're talking about now. That seems to be the latest target.
Absolutely. They're still heading for June the 17th. That's the date that is in everybody's mind. The government over here today have cleared the way for Premier League clubs, well, and other clubs, to start contact training from the middle of this week. That's if the clubs feel that they can safely do so. And with another player testing positive today, a Bournemouth player, we don't know who he is yet, but there has been another positive test, the eighth in the Premier League so far. There are still questions to be asked, but at the moment, it does seem as if the pressure to get the Premier League playing again is really pulling the strings. And as I say, they opened the door this morning to contact training, and if they do that, then actual full playing won't be far behind.
You mentioned their testing and that's ongoing and it'll be ongoing throughout this coming week as well. Eight positive tests so far. That's out of a total of some 1,774 as we speak. And of course, you know, the hope would have been zero positive tests. But given that number, eight out of over 1,000, are they taking encouragement from that, perhaps?
I think they are definitely taking encouragement, and certainly that's been the approach of several of the players who've been asked about it. Andros Townsend amongst them, saying that the testing is really, really good, but it kind of has to be. There is another element, of course, as well, that the Black, Asian and minority ethnic community seem to be struggling with this coronavirus rather more than the white players over here as well. So Troy Deeney, for instance, has said, look, I'm not going back to training yet till I know more about it. And he actually had a Zoom meeting with members of the government on Friday alongside former Arsenal man Ian Wright to go through the particular problems that part of the community suffer from. And N'Golo Kante at Chelsea also said, thanks, no thanks. I won't be training just yet. I need to know a little more about what's going on. So, yes, there is a feeling of more confidence because of the testing and the fact that the figures are pretty low, all things considered. However, there are still some big questions around, and until those are answered, there are several players who you feel might not be quite as keen to get on board.
And the likes of Troy Deeney, obviously, has he been tested before? Because I know he did. He came out straight away and said he wasn't happy because he's a young child at home and circumstances around his family life. There's the reason one of his main reasons he doesn't want to go back. But have them guys actually been tested, or are they not part of the figures, you know, Guy?
Well, I think they have been tested. Certainly all of the Watford players have been tested. Troy Deeney was one of the reasons he didn't want to go, was because Watford defender Adrian Mariappa had tested positive. So each club is testing everybody as far as we know at the moment. So yes, at the moment Troy Deeney does not have it as far as we understand, but he is concerned, one, about picking it up in contact training, and two, then taking it home with him. So it is a very tough time for the players themselves, having to make these decisions. But they're being pressured towards, please play again, chaps, because several clubs are now really struggling financially, particularly outside the Premier League. And unless there is a resumption. The Huddersfield chairman today was saying he could see 50 or 60 clubs going to the wall over the next within the next year, particularly if crowds can't get in for next season. So there are a lot of pressures now being heaped on the shoulders of the players to resume.
Pat, that point that's made there by Guy, clubs outside the elite, if you will, even within the Premiership, but certainly outside the Premiership and outside maybe the Championship, down the lower leagues, they're going to be under enormous pressure, a little like the clubs here in this country. If there's, it's behind closed doors football, they're going to lose match day income as well and all that goes with it and perhaps associated sponsorship. So it's a concern for the so-called smaller clubs, no matter what country you're playing in.
I think it's a concern for everybody, and like you say, the smaller clubs, particularly in the likes of England, you know, as you say, you know, their revenue streams, not like the Premier League, that the main revenue stream is the TV income. You know, their revenue streams is around season tickets, it's around match day operations in the stadium, it's around people buying match day tickets, sponsorship, as you say. So, you know, if that's not coming in, then obviously over a long period of time, that has a massive impact on how the club is run, and that is a worrying case. You were hoping that if the Premier League gets back up and running, that there is some money filtered down to... Because you don't want to lose football clubs. The last thing you want to do is the money. There's so much money in the Premier League. Can that be filtered down maybe to lend support over a period of time for the lower league clubs? But I'm sure that's the same. It's the same in Scotland. And, you know, it'll be the same in Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland. You know, that revenue stream that we have, you know, as I said to you before, we don't have a TV deal. It's the same in the League of Ireland. So it's the revenue that comes in from the match day games is what keeps these clubs going, you know, and that is really difficult for everybody.
And what's your view, Pat, on another element that Guy raised there, the pressure on players? Because as the weeks go on and you get closer perhaps to a return date in the Premier League, there'll be this groundswell of momentum about the Premier League is coming back and all the hype that goes with it. But that individual players will still have their concerns. They might have a family member, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, who have an underlying condition. On the one hand, on a personal level, they might be scared about it all and, you know, the whole business of coming into contact with players. They've got to go home to a family. They may have somebody who has an underlying condition, and yet they'll feel perhaps a certain degree of pressure from their own respective clubs and indeed from the fans of those clubs.
Yeah, listen, it is a difficult question, but, you know, from my opinion, as being a manager previously, that I think a player's got to have that option. I don't think you can put any pressure on a player, and I firmly believe that right across the board, whether that's a top Premier League player or right down to the lower leagues, that, you know, a player like Troy Deeney decides that he doesn't want to go back and he doesn't want to play. You know, that's his opinion and that's his entitlement. You know, we don't know his circumstances. Everybody's circumstances are different. So I think if a player decides that he doesn't want to play for them reasons, mostly for medical reasons, I just think you've got to accept that. You know, the longer term, how long does that go on for? Obviously, then you come into contractual stuff. But I think initially, if he's made a decision, you know, based on the health of his family, well, then I think he just got to respect that and let it be. You know, and I think all players have got to have that. And that's where, you know, if I think the majority of players have come out in all leagues and said they want to return, but you will get circumstances that certain players won't want to do that because of their own individual situations, and we just got to respect that.
Guys, some of the clubs a couple of weeks ago, Watford, the aforementioned Watford and West Ham, they were quite vocal about their concerns about resuming the season. The cynics would suggest that clubs perhaps in the relegation zone, well, they would, wouldn't they? But where are they at now, the teams in the bottom six who initially raised concerns about returning to football this season?
Well, I think the main problems that the bottom six felt was when the idea looked to be that they would have to play all the matches in neutral grounds. And that was when they were particularly against the idea of resuming and having to be forced to play away when they were desperate for home advantage, despite the fact there would be no crowd there. So I think that now that has been taken away, and that, as far as we know, all the matches will be played at the scheduled grounds. That has been put to bed. It now seems as if most of the teams want to just finish the season now. Yes, the ones at the bottom, they would certainly benefit if it was just called off now. But I think the pressure has been put on a bit, and there is also the parachute payments that will come into play. for those who are relegated. And at the moment, it seems if everyone has decided that they are going to play when and if we do get going again. West Ham, indeed, are already talking to fans about setting up Zoom links so they can have the fans' faces on the big screens during the match. So, yeah, the plans seem apace at the moment.
I think if you just look during the week, Manchester United saying they were £20 million out of pocket over this. I think that's going to be one of the main factors. As you said, clubs can't survive if they've no money coming in. And if a club like Manchester United's having to shell out that kind of debt straight off because of this, you can imagine how the other clubs are. And you said West Ham trying to do Zoom or something like that that would get some kind of money coming back into the club is the only way this is going to really go forward, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Everybody now has reached the point, well, it is not just football, it's across business, isn't it? That we've got to kind of get started again if we can. So that is certainly where the pressure that is now coming is, I'm really sorry, guys, we're going to have to do this because we've got to get started or there won't be anything to come back to. Interesting little side, though, people like Martin O'Neill have not been alone in saying football's going to have to, and I call it football and not soccer, that football is going to have to look at the sort of way it is financed and how it is put together, that massive money transfers at a time like this look a bit daft if you're not going to be able to get the same kind of money coming in if you've got to survive a season without any fans paying to come into the ground. So a lot for the sport to talk about and look ahead to in the future. But I think really on everybody's mind is just getting this season finished. Get this season finished. Then if they need to change things for next season, less games, no European, whatever, then at least we've got this season out the way and any changes can then be made going forward rather than clobbering this particular event.
Yeah, and they must be heartened and encouraged by the way the Bundesliga has returned two rounds of matches and very few problems so far in Germany, so far anyway.
Absolutely right. Though it was interesting that the stats, they looked at the stats of the match. There's far less physical contact, far fewer bookings. It's been quite interesting how players are, without the crowd in, for one thing, baying for blood, and two, with the kind of problems with contact given the coronavirus, that the game is changing slightly. But he's going ahead. La Liga has been given the go-ahead as well. We're expecting an announcement from Italy before too much longer. France are looking at it as well. So it does look as if the big leagues in Europe are certainly looking to finish this season and then just see where we are after that.
Okay, well, listen, we leave it there. Guy, I knew you were going to say football rather than soccer anyway, so I took that as a given. I've been well outgunned on this one.
Can I be very boring here as well, though? We used
be
to call
boring,
it...
but this is a boring podcast.
Marvellous. We used to call it soccer in the 19th century. And it's turned into football because there were two kinds of football. There was rugby football and association football. Rugby became rugger, and association, the sock bit of it, became soccer. It was only when football became increasingly popular as the soccer variety that it became football and not soccer. So we did start saying soccer.
There are many reasons why I'm delighted you're on this podcast, and that's just one of them. Guy, thanks very much and for that insight. Guy Swindles, and that firmly answers it. I just have to roll with it. It is football, but maybe it's a cultural thing, James.
Maybe it is, but every day is a learning day, eh, Adrian? And there's your piece for today. Thanks to Guy.
Yeah. I take that lesson on board. Pat Fennin is still with us. Pat, we're going to chat to James Chambers very shortly. I'm sure you have nothing but nice memories as a player and as a person of James Chambers.
Obviously, he had James as a young boy when he was at Shells, very young boy, just starting out his career. I haven't forgiven him. He wouldn't sign for me for Shamrock Rovers a few years ago, so I haven't given him for that.
But he was a very solid player. He, of course, just announced his retirement at the tail end of last year, having finished out his career in the States. We'll have him on very shortly, but a very kind of firm, good, strong, holding midfielder type.
Yeah, he was a good player, James. Like I said, he was a schoolboy at Shells and running around the time of Gary Deegan as well. And we had a very good schoolboy set up at Shelburne at the time, and James made his way through the ranks there. And yeah, he's a good player, competitive player, good on the ball as well, you know. Yeah, fitness level's quite good and strong boy, you know. But yeah, it really, really, and he's done well for himself. He's had a good career. He went off to America as well. And, you know, he's a fabulous lad as well, James. Really good fella. And like I said, I did try to convince him to sign for Rovers a few years ago. And but I think he took himself back off to America. So, but was a very, very good young player, like I said, in around the time where the Shells had a lot of good young players coming through their academy.
James is on the line. James, why didn't you join Pat at Shamrock Rovers? Come on.
Oh, good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good. And you? I don't know if your ears are burning there.
just slightly. How are you, Pat? You well?
Hiya, James. I'm good. Yourself?
Yeah, that's a great way to start it. I think I just fancy the change at that stage. I was had it coming off the back of a decent season with Pats, and they wanted me to return. And Pat obviously was looking to bring me up the Rovers, but I just felt at that stage I just wanted pastures new. And thankfully the opportunity arose to come out here, and like that was almost 5 years ago now, 4.5 years ago. So I haven't looked back since.
And you're in Philadelphia. You finished with Bethlehem Steel as a player at the tail end of last season. What are you up to these days? I know that coaching is very much on your mind.
Yeah. So I finished up the back end of last season, and I hadn't officially announced anything or anything along those lines. The back end of last season, I was being prepared on myself for the last kind of 2.5 years as regards coaching part time on the side of still playing within our younger academy. So thankfully, the tail end of last season, I had a couple of options to continue to play, but I felt that it was the right opportunity and the right time for me to kind of transition into the coaching. So thankfully, I'm doing that now. I've been looking after an under-9 team within our MLS academy, which is the Philadelphia Union, and I've been an assistant at one of the older ages group, a second assistant type style. So next year I have a different kind of assignment that I'm excited for.
And is that where life is for you now? You see yourself staying in the United States, do you?
Certainly for the foreseeable future. I don't have any plans to return or anything like that. I think I had some options to return the tail end of last season to play in the League of Ireland, but it wasn't something that I gave it some consideration for sure, but it wasn't something that I kind of envisaged being the next step of my playing career. I just decided to pull the curtain on that and start with the coaching side of it.
Yeah. And what's the latest in the United States in terms of football and football being permitted? Where is it at, the MLS in particular?
Within the MLS, most groups have started to return to individual training. So I know our first team, they're not training at their current facility because it's not... It hasn't come out of our red phase yet. They're in the yellow phase. So they've moved kind of 30 minutes down the road to a different kind of state, Delaware. So they're down there training individually. And that should continue for the next couple of weeks until they figure out the next stage of where the MLS is going to go. I think there's talks about them potentially going to Florida, by all accounts. I think I read that somewhere, that they're thinking of bringing the whole MLS down to Florida for maybe 8 to 10 weeks, having 3 weeks of a mini preseason and then playing 5 or 6 games each down there. And hopefully by then you're into the back end of the summer and we can have a little bit more of an idea of how the league can finish up going into the fall.
James, quick one for you. What's the lifestyle like over there now for you? Like, was that a big thing for you to change there? Because the likes of yourself, Paddy Barrett's been there, obviously Thomas Stewart was on the West Coast. So it's a fair few players have gone out over the last number of years.
Yeah, I think the lifestyle right now, though, is a great stuck indoors all the time. But this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah. Well, the Philadelphia have opened up a couple of their campsites, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, I think we're 2 weeks away. We have the green light to go into the yellow phase. Kind of people can start to... restaurants or nothing like that will open up yet. But it'll be kind of... takeout and delivery and more parks and stuff like that will start to open. People can advance into groups of, I think it's 25. So we're slowly getting there within 2 weeks. But within our region, we've been, because we're one of the bigger cities, we've been one of the last to reopen because there was a lot of cases in Philadelphia. So we've kind of been left to last. But as regards your previous question, the lifestyle, I'd heard about it and spoke to people about it. I spoke to Tommy Stewart before I came out. West Coast and East Coast is kind of a totally different mentality. But I'd spoken to Derek Foran as well and Richie Ryan and a couple of people who were out here maybe a year or so before me. And they only spoke good things about the States and about the league itself. So the lifestyle is incredible. You know, I love it. Just like the weather in Philadelphia, 8 months of the year is fantastic. The rest of it is not too bad. It's cold, but it's bearable. And I'm set up shop here now. You know, I have a fiance and everything like that. So I can't speak highly enough about the lifestyle. And the people that are here and the people I get to work with are phenomenal people.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it sounds like you've landed on your feet, which is terrific. But it is a very difficult time for players. And I know, you know, you've spoken before in the past about, you know, your own mental health issues. And it has been a very difficult time for players who are so used to the interaction of the dressing room on a daily basis and preparing for match nights. And all of that is gone. So they've, you know, it has proven to be difficult for lots of players. We've heard that no matter where we've discussed it, be it with people in Denmark or in England or in Scotland and obviously in America as well. It's been hard. It's been hard for players, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. And I think especially since I stopped playing the back end of last season that I didn't really look when you're a player, you're told to be here at a set time. You're told what to wear. You're more or less told what to eat. Like, because it's more or less consistent. So you have that structure throughout your career. And when I finished playing, I certainly missed that for a couple of months. I'm still kind of missing that structure. Thankfully, I'm coaching. So I do have that to a certain extent. So I can certainly sympathize right now with players as regards the structure and the everyday routine that you have of going training and always looking towards, like, a Saturday, for instance, of your game. So everything is based around the Saturday. Your structure all week continues to stay the same. Obviously, it can change a little bit depending on if you're home or away, but it's more or less regiment. So right now, with no kind of, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. I know things are getting a little bit better, but for players in certain leagues, especially the ones that aren't earning hundreds and thousands of pounds a week, there is a little bit of uncertainty, absolutely. And that's kind of quite worrying for players, for sure.
Yeah. And have you been talking to players that, you know, players that you know, and perhaps giving them words of encouragement?
I don't know if they want to listen to me. but no, I've spoken to a few people. When I stopped playing with Bethlehem last year, the kind of the team changed a little bit, as in the name changed and stuff like that. So they went with a younger group. So I kind of try to, I don't really interact with those players. They're a lot of good players in that team and a lot of good people, but I try and distance myself from the guy who was at Bethlehem. I don't want that anymore. So I don't really speak to those guys. I'm still in the same organization, obviously, but I want to be seen as a coach now. So I don't really interact with those players, but I've spoken to people back home and I've spoken to people throughout the league here as well, you know, and everybody's kind of in the dark, you know. I don't know what MLS obviously has a huge budget that they can kind of make things happen logistically, and obviously people want to get the major sports back up and running here in the US, because especially at the moment it's pretty difficult when people don't have something to look forward to it. And a city like Philadelphia, which is a huge American football city, is like that has to return, and that will return. So I think it's certainly difficult, but I'm not quite sure about USL, the league that a lot of, like, the Irish guys like Richie Ryan and Paddy Barton and people like that are playing in. I've heard that they may or may not return, or it may be a smaller season. I don't know what way that's going to go, to be completely honest with you.
And what about the quality of footballers that you've come across over there in terms of the standard?
I think the first year I was a little bit taken aback, because I didn't think the level was that high. We weren't, as a team, we weren't particularly good, but I didn't feel the teams we were playing against were much better either. So that was kind of like a little bit worrying for me as regards, like, if this is what the level of other teams is like, and we're pretty bad, this doesn't bode too well. But in the second season, then we got some better players in, and more players had started to come into the league from abroad and from throughout the US, like ex-MLS players would have come down. Mm-hmm. So the level continued to get better. And probably I'd say like the second, third and fourth season, the level of the players was really, really high. There was some quality players. Like Joe Cole played in the league. There's been other players that have dropped down from MLS. And like every week you'd always come across a player, whether you knew of him or whether you didn't, that you kind of came off the field being like, yeah, he's a top player.
And in terms of your own future, now you mentioned, you know, coaching and life in America. When you look back on your League of Ireland career, bear in mind there's a coach on the line playing under the likes of Liam Buckley, Michael O'Neill at Shamrock Rovers, obviously under Pat Fennan. Will you take a little bit from each of those coaches that you played under, or are you very much your own man in terms of the way you want to go about your coaching business?
No, I certainly will take a little bit from everybody that I played against. I think it's important. And I also think like being a player, it gives you a little bit, it gives you a little bit of a leg up, but not as much as you would think. I certainly felt, and I was kind of like bullheaded in a way that, oh, I played the game, I know this, I know that. Like, I think when you're going to coaching fresh, like you it's a blank canvas for you. You have certain ideas, but it's a complete blank canvas. And it's important to stay true to yourself and continue to be you. And I want to stay true to my personality and what I am, but also have to take little bits from everybody else. You know, man management of certain people and the intensity of others and how they kind of look after a bigger group, or they single out individuals to help them. You know, I think that's really, really important. But also from when I played with Pat when I was 17, like to maybe a year ago, like the game has changed so, so much in those 15 years. You know, it's changed significantly. People have changed for sure, and players certainly have changed.
What would you take from a Pat Fennan dressing room? What learnings would you take from that?
I think just like the how we competed. Like, well, I was only a young guy that came into it, but how they had to compete and all the players that were in that dressing room. Like, there was no bad players. You didn't look in the dressing room and think, ah, he's poor. Like, he's not good. Everyone in that dressing room was a top player, and just like the intensity that they wanted to train at and get better and just win, you know. Ultimately, I think at that level and at the elite level of the sport, like, nothing matters other than winning. Like, nothing matters other than winning. And I think I'm fortunate enough to be going into the youth side of the game where it's about development. But once you start to go up the rungs, nothing else matters other than winning, you know. You can say it's about fun and enjoyment. It's not fun unless you win.
Pat, do you like what you're hearing? I know you wouldn't want to be, you know, giving advice to a young coach starting out. But if you were to give any coach, not just James, who's on the line and who obviously you played with and managed. Yeah. But if you were to give a coach starting out one piece of advice, is there anything in particular you'd say to them?
Yeah, in fairness, I think James has nailed it there. I think the one thing you've got to be is true to yourself. You know, stick to what you believe in, you know, because you'll have loads of doubts when you become a coach or a manager and things will change, but you've got to stick by what you think is the right thing to do, you know. And the second thing is probably always make sure you've got good people around you. That's the one thing I sort of, you know, as a manager or coach is make sure that you've got good staff around you. You know, there. But listen, James is a very level-headed fellow, as you can hear, and he has a determination to succeed. And the good thing is, from my point of view, when I came into coaching, I stopped playing. I was given the Shelbourne job, you know, the biggest team in the country at the time, straight from stop playing into that manager. So I never coached, where James is starting down the ladder and he can gain loads of experience with that, you know. And sometimes it's good to go straight in, but other times it's good to build and learn the game, you know. So, but I think he nailed it himself there. I think always be true to yourself and, you know, stick to your own principles.
Well, listen, James, we wish you the very best of luck and enjoy life in the States. And who knows, maybe one day you'll be back coaching in this country, we shall see. But you certainly paint a great picture of the lifestyle in Philadelphia. So maybe you mightn't be in a mad rush to get back home just yet.
No, not immediately anyway. Thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate having me on.
I tell you what, just before you go, just to round it off, earlier in the podcast we were asking about, is it soccer, is it football? When you were growing up, was it soccer or football?
No, it was always football. It's always football.
Well done. But in the States, of course, it is soccer, isn't it?
Yeah, I have to change. Once I come through customs, I just change automatically to calling it soccer.
Okay. All right, listen, the best of luck, James. Many thanks for joining us on the line. Pat Fennan, thanks to you as well. And James O'Toole, as ever, many thanks. Football wins. It's football, not soccer. Until next week and the RTÉ Football Podcast. Bye-bye.